everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast here at Arch and Towers. My name is Michael Bailey. We've got a bumper crowd today. We've got Ian Clark, head of news on the newspapers. Good evening, Ian.
Good evening.
God, I don't think I've ever called you Ian. That was weird. Chief Norwich City writer for the Eastern Daily Press, Paddy Davitt, is here. How are you, Pad? You well?
Very well, my man. Very well.
I'm rattling through it here. And sports journalist at the EDP, big Norwich fan, David Freezer. David, welcome.
Hello. Much nicer than last week.
and the week before. Yeah. The week before that. The week before that. Indeed, we have a win to celebrate. And I guess the big question here, the 5-0 victory over Brentford. What difference does it make? Where are we now? Is this the turning of the corner or just putting a plaster over those cracks?
I think next Saturday shows that, and probably next Tuesday and next Friday. I think that these next three games and probably the ones after are the key. I mean, for me, Saturday was obviously a great win. It was a real boost after some pretty grim days. But I thought Brentford were about the worst side I've seen for a long time. I thought they were dreadful. But having said that, you can only beat what's in front of you using that old cliche, and the Pritchard-inspired Canaries I thought were really good.
I wouldn't necessarily say Brentford were the worst side Norwich have played, but maybe put in the worst performance. Yeah. They had something about them going forward, I thought.
Blackburn were pretty ropey on the opening day.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd put them considerably worse than Brentford. I thought Brentford looked like a team, a bit like Norwich, on a shocking run. There wasn't a lot of confidence. And once it went 3-0, then they more or less raised the white flag. But, credit to Norwich. They really had to win. It wasn't about the performance, really. But if you play well, you're going to more often than not win a game. But they just had to win. And Alex Neil said it, didn't he? That for everybody, not just for him, for players, for fans, probably for the board as well, because they might have had an uncomfortable evening if it had been a sixth straight defeat, put it that way.
What was nice was to see them kick on, see them go 2-0 up at half, 2-0 up, wasn't it, at half-time, and then score another three goals in the second half. There have been issues over the second half all season, really.
It's the first time this season that a first-team game has felt like a fun game to be at. I mean, I've been at under-23 games this season, the AFL Cup game against Coventry, they were fun, but it actually felt like there was a bit of atmosphere. It felt like there was a bit of fun between the travelling fans and the home fans, and it was actually an enjoyable afternoon. I think as much as QPR was the worst timed game for Norwich, particularly as you look at QPR's results since that, this was perfectly timed as well, because Brentford just looked like, as you said, I don't think they're a terrible team. I don't think they were as bad as Holloway's Millwall were a couple of seasons ago, but they clearly aren't in a good place at the moment, are they? So it was, it was good fun.
QPR fan on the internet bet me a tenner that QPR would finish in the top six after they beat Norwich, and took that. I think I'll be all right with that one. Interesting you mentioned the atmosphere there, David, because I don't know, I felt it was kind of indifferent and a bit awkward.
I wouldn't say it was back to sort of peak times, but it was the first time when there's been a bit of life. I mean, it's been like a library for a lot of the season because people have just been frustrated, and there has been a bit of a relegation hangover, but it just perhaps the start of, you know, shoots of life, hopefully.
Yeah. So what was the difference then? What was it? And we asked this question of Alex Pritchard, Alec Neil, whoever, what the difference was. I'm going to ask you guys now.
There was a few differences. I mean, to me, Housen and Pinto back made a massive difference. I thought Housen was tremendous, and he seemed to sort of almost, obviously the captaincy, the leadership, I thought he brought some real quality and guile. Pinto's energy, bombing up and down that side and actually using the width, he hardly got off the touchline, did he? I thought he was terrific. And Pritchard in the place where it seems he really is going to be at his best, playing him there, giving him the freedom, albeit he was given a lot of space by the generous bees, but used that and was, I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Ultimately, it's not difficult, is it? You get good players in their right positions, and you get a performance. So, and consequently, to pick up Clarkie's point there, that to me made it a lot more proactive in terms of Jacob Murphy and Naismith as well. You know, I wrote about it today. I mean, wide areas they've been poor, just going up blind alleys on this run, but they actually looked like they were potent and they were proactive, and there was an actual template woven around Pritchard and what he was doing. So, you know, that looked like, going forward, that looked like a cohesive unit, and we've not been able to say that too often on this run. With the caveat, of course, as bad as Brentford were, there were one or two nervy moments, I thought, defensively, before they got that elusive clean sheet. So
that Hogan header, That could have made it been so different. It was Hogan, wasn't it?
The one where he missed the target and sort of headed it wide.
Yeah, it was like a Cristiano Ronaldo leap above everyone, wasn't it? And then he thought, how have I missed that?
I tell you what, though, watching the replay of that again, his movement from back post coming across the goal was fantastic. And, you know, I kind of quite like what I saw. Yeah. And given the sort of links and what have you, you take him a carrot?
He reminded me a little bit of Shane Long. Thought in more than just looks. I thought he looked like there might be something there. I'd put it down squarely on Saturday to Pritchard. I thought from minute one he had the absolute right intention, the energy, the pace. He looked like it was like him starting his Norwich City career that day, because obviously he had an injury at the start of the season which messed him up, didn't it? It was a bit of a strange one, a side strain, and he was only on for about 10 minutes, wasn't he? So that obviously set him back, but I thought he was superb. I mean, he's got attributes there which Wes probably just hasn't got. We all know the magic that Wes has got in his boots, but he's never going to move at the pace that Pritchard was, and he can get stuck in as well.
I mean, as you say, that tweak with Pritchard, the two guys coming back from injury, but then everyone else's level also seemed to raise. It's quite chicken and egg, isn't it? You don't know if, I mean, Norwich got ahead so early in the game, you don't know how much of that was sort of down to the dynamic of the game as opposed to how they sort of set out originally. But I thought Robbie Brady, I thought that was certainly his best performance of the season, and it happened to be at left back as well, and I don't really think we necessarily, well, maybe we should have that debate again, you know, is that somewhere where he can flourish in the championship in a similar way to Ivo Pinto, looking, you know, a solid defender and superb attacking threat at right back as opposed to when he was in the Premier League.
He should be able to flourish in both positions, but I like him in either, really. But I thought he actually did a bit of both, didn't he? He got forward well, obviously got the good goal, made the space, and again shows what we know he can do.
When he plays like that, I prefer him to Olsen, because he'll actually make a tackle and be physical. Olsen is an international player and he plays percentage game, doesn't he? He runs alongside, and I'm sure if you look at a computer screen, yeah, you possibly prevent more crosses actually coming into the box by just running alongside. But sometimes there's a lot to be said, particularly at home, for a player slamming into a tackle, putting someone almost into the stands and actually making themselves, you know, known to their opposition player early on, because that gets the crowd on side and it gets the opposition winger on the back foot.
It's just that Brady probably would have spent the first however many months of the season missing the tackle and ended up in the stands while the winger carried on going. But I mean, it was a wonderful cross as well for the first goal, wasn't it, Pad? And are we definitely giving it to Jacob or own goal? What was it? What do we reckon in there?
Jacob Murphy, no way. Came off the defender.
Oof.
Even with replay, I couldn't say I was 100% certain, but it's very difficult to say which foot. I think Jacob's probably a bit, he tweeted, didn't he, saying that he's claiming that?
Because he did.
But I think he was joking.
He would do.
He doesn't write like a man who's got the final touch, did he? So, you know, I did notice, and I tweeted about it half time, Wes and Malumbo were definitely giving him some jip, and I think it was probably along the lines of, you should have claimed that. As in, make more of an effort. He just basically ran into the net and got the ball. So, reactions tell me everything. No, I'm not giving that to him. Whether the people who matter will give it to him or not, I don't know. At the minute, it's probably his, but I know there's a dubious panel, isn't there? So,
a dubious panel of goals as opposed to a dubious goals panel. Wonderful ball in from Robbie Brady. Wonderfully taken goal as well. I mean, the pass as well from Pritchard for that Brady goal was stupendous.
Stupendous. There you go. No more to be said. Yeah, no, it's just quality operator. And it's frustrating that it's taken until now for us to see that, really, because it was clear the last time Brentford came here, he was the star of the show that day in that position. You know, they paid a lot of money for him in the summer, and I think we should have seen him there before now, but that's water under the bridge. What happens now, starting with Barnsley?
It is indeed, and that's a nice moment, I think, to bring on a little bit from Alex Pritchard.
Alex Pritchard, you must have enjoyed that very, very much.
Yeah, I think it's always good to win 5-0 off the back of the results we've had, but yeah, I think today it was brilliant for us.
And first time we've got to see you properly in that central role, which I would imagine, as much as you're happy to play wherever you'll play, you've been wanting to have a go in that role too.
Yeah, I just think the gaffer chose the team and it was there and I had to take it, and I think I'd done that today.
How difficult has it been over these last few weeks? Because, of course, it's 5 successive defeats. How much does this draw a line under that?
I think the whole team, it's hard. it's hard. You're obviously losing, the fans are on top, and but it is what it is, and we just got to keep trying to bounce back, and we've done that today.
Yeah, and it must have taken a lot of self-belief in your guys and backing of the manager too, because there's no doubt he has come under a lot of stick in these weeks.
Yeah, but that's football. Everyone's every manager. You don't get results. It's going to happen. But we've stuck together. We've put it in, even though, like Derby last week, it should have been a 0-0 draw, but it weren't. And we come here today and we put in a performance, and 5-0. We go away happy.
Was there something a little extra in the back of your mind because it was Brentford this afternoon?
No, not at all. It's just another team at the end of the day. Like, but it is what it is. 5-0, so we carry on.
And what pleased you most about that performance? Was it the goal? Was it the assists? Which bit?
I just think the pressing and the way we moved the ball in the final third, I felt it was fluid. It was great play, and we created a lot of chances today. And yeah, the assist and the goal was good. I've been craving a goal since Leeds, but I'm thankful it came today.
And you've been in and out of the side, and yeah, you said you've maybe played sort of slightly wider as well. Mm. How much would you love a run in that role now?
Yeah, it would be nice, but it's up to the gaffer, isn't it?
It is indeed. Well done, Alex. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
Welcome back to the Pinken.com podcast. Before we get back to the discussion, think you're the best at fantasy football? Do not wait until the end of the season to find out. Put your fantasy football knowledge to the test, people, and win cash every week at DraftKings.co.uk. Apparently, DraftKings is the world's number one destination for one-day fantasy football for cash. Now, you can go to DraftKings.co.uk/pink now to pick a team and enter this Saturday's contest for a shot at winning a share of $200, which I would imagine is probably worth more in terms of pounds now than when whoever wrote this down wrote it down. So get in there. That is the address, DraftKings.co.uk/pink, to play free. Is there anything else anyone wants to discuss from the game? Because I feel like a weird, you know, weird situation here in that a bit limbo. It was a good result. We want to see what else happens. But what about what else happened at Carrow Road?
To follow on from what Clark said about Howson and how good he was, I thought he made Dorans look a completely different player almost. I thought Dorans played pretty well, even though he missed his penalty but managed to sort of get fortunate with the follow-up. I thought his distribution was much better. It almost seemed to me, I was sat just about on halfway in the Gerrard stand, and Howson seemed to be playing a bit further forward than Dorans generally. It was almost like there was three central midfielders in a row with Dorans, Howson and then Pritchard, rather than two players sitting deep. Howson seemed to be a little bit more advanced, but Dorans looked more like, it almost reminded me more of a David Fox display from the Lambert team. He was almost that quarterback role, and he was effective and he got stuck in. So that's more of the Graham Dorans that we want to see. I don't think we're going to see the Graham Dorans of West Brom in 2010 scoring 10 goals unless he gets 10 penalties this season, because I just don't think he's that player anymore. But I was impressed with him.
I think there's two things we need to touch on. So let's start with the Murphy's impact, because I think four of the five goals were involved one of the twins in one form or another. They were both on the pitch by the end of the game. Jacob, of course, started it. That is all you can ask from those two. And then Jacob seems to have got back to his level from earlier in the season, and Josh is making an impact when he does come on.
Yeah, I mean, I like them both. I like their directness, and you just want them to do what they do naturally, which is go for it, be attacking, don't have sort of fear. And, you know, if they make mistakes, they make mistakes. I don't know when we'll get on their backs and make a mistake, but just use their natural flair and they will prosper.
It's so hard, isn't it, Bud? Because we talk about this great performance and how well these players did in this situation, but there is this caveat of Brentford were so bad, their manager called them embarrassing.
Well, yeah, but as I say, I mean, you know, they're 1-0 down after 6 minutes. Was it 2-0 down after 16? I think it's too easy maybe to look back and rank them as fairly diabolical. They finished like a very bedraggled outfit. And as I say, you know, he's right to dig into them. I think there was a few inquests in the away dressing room looking at the quotes that have subsequently come out. But, you know, as Dave says, you know, Hogan scores that goal, then we're not saying Brentford are the worst side ever seen at Carrow Road. We might be actually saying Norwich have got to have got some serious thinking to do, because that game could have changed completely. So, you know, okay, yeah, they weren't great, but you know, Norwich had to put them to the sword, and my God, they did that. So, but Barnsley will be more of a test, you know, a big win at Birmingham Saturday, and they seem to be getting something going up there. So let's see where we are next Monday.
It's fair to say Norwich have played some poor sides this year and not managed to score 5 goals against them.
Yeah, there's some tough games coming up in the new year, aren't there? Some of the bigger teams coming. And just to add on the Murphys as well, I mean, we've seen what they can do in under-23s and under-18s games for a while now. And you could see, even in the short period of time they were on the pitch together on Saturday, they look for each other almost automatically, don't they? And I thought Jacob was actually guilty, once Josh was on the pitch, of trying to find Josh as soon as he got the ball, because I thought he went a little bit off the boil. But you, when they were both on the pitch as well, you can see that Jacob has got the defensive side of things and Josh still isn't quite getting it. There were times when you're 5-0 up, go and slam into a tackle, go and show Alex Neil what you can do defensively, and that you're aware that that's the side of your game you've got to improve, because that is the difference between them, isn't it? And he didn't. He was sort of, it comes second nature to him. It doesn't come as an immediate response that, oh, that player's going for a run, I've got to get after him. It was sort of feigning to defend every time, whereas I just wanted him to go and put his shoulder into someone, show that he was aware that that's the side of the game that he's got to do.
You've been watching too much rugby, that's your problem. Do you want too much slam and bam?
Maybe, but I don't want football to be a game where there's no physical contact. That's what a lot of people liked about Bradley Johnson, that he gets stuck in, particularly at home. It gets the fans on side. I know it's not Pep Guardiola's world of football, but in the Championship, you guarantee a scrap breaks out during a game, everyone in the stands is loving it. Go, yeah, go on, lads, get stuck in. I know it's not the politically correct thing to say, but that's football. This is England, not Spain.
Oh, it's all right. I'm only poking you, Dave. I'm only poking you. Don't worry, it's all right. Nelson Oliveira was the other one I wanted to mention, because, I mean, Norwich did have a few players out. They didn't really seem to miss them, of course. One they didn't miss was Cameron Jerome, because Nelson Oliveira started to show us what he's about properly, didn't he, Pat? I suppose that was the key thing about his performance on Saturday.
Well, I think also he actually had people who could support him and supply him with chances, so it's a completely different game as opposed to here's a 50-yard pass from Ryan Bennett at head height, try and do something with it, which is pretty much what he's had to feed on to this point. All I would say is that the lad will score goals. We saw that was a finish of quite a decent operator, you know, the swivel and then just instinctively near post, unstoppable goal.
I thought he was going to repeat his Barnett goal. He went through in the second half, didn't he? And all of a sudden, 25 yards, he had the chance to shoot, but he didn't quite get it in this time, did he?
No, and I mean, scored against Leeds in the League Cup as well. You know, horses for courses. I've said it quite a lot since Saturday, really, both with Pritchard and Wes, both with Oliveira and Jerome. There will be games and there'll be opponents where one will be suited over the other, because they are distinct, those lads. So that's for the manager to try and do that, not with the benefit of hindsight, but in advance. And whether Barnsley will suit, you don't know. It could be a game for Jerome, but it sounds like that's more to do with fitness concerns, because he was nowhere near for Saturday.
So if you were to accuse Alec Neil of giving people the chance to put things right week in, week out.
Of anything, my friend.
I mean, would it be fair to say he didn't necessarily change things up when it was going badly, so therefore he should keep it at least the same now that it's going well? Like, I mean, I'd personally be really disappointed if Alex Pritchard wasn't playing in the middle on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. For me, it's not a case of even the loyalty aspect about staying loyal to lads who have done it. It is got to be pragmatic. We're playing X this weekend. What are their strengths? How do we nullify them with these players in my squad? And too often with Neil, particularly on this run, it's the we'll score one more than you attitude. We don't necessarily need to worry about you. Now, I'm not advocating a return to the Houghton mantra where it was every week you thought they were playing Real Madrid. in terms of he would talk up the opponents and what their strengths and weaknesses were. But you need to acknowledge that in your planning if you're Alex Neil, and you need to adapt your plans all the time. I don't think you can go now and say those 11 have beaten Brentford 5-0, so they are the best 11 to go and play Barnsley away. It needs to be far more nuanced than that. Me personally, despite what Dave was saying there about Dorans, I would take him out this weekend, and I think you would have a Malumbu character back in there and just try and make the midfield nice and competitive, nice and combative, and then let a Pritchard go and play, or let a Jacob Murphy But you know, ultimately that's what he gets paid to do, make those decisions, and he didn't do it right on this run, and that's why his position was under threat.
Yeah, it'll be interesting what happens if Martin Olsen is fit as well, what that does with Robbie Brady too. I expect Yusuf Malumba will start as well on Saturday. I mean, what does this do for Alec Neil? It's a weird situation. I sense that a lot of people at Carrow Road were thinking, well, you know, it's all going to go wrong here. Oh, it hasn't, and weren't quite sure how to react to it all at times.
I mean, he must have felt more secure by what the board had said in the middle of this really bad run, and if, you know, Saturday clearly would have helped.
I think Derby helped as well to an extent.
Yeah, and I mean, as someone who was obviously fairly clear, I thought he should have gone. I've almost put out my mind now that it's an issue because the board have made it very clear. And unless there's another really horrendous run, then it's not really an issue. So I think he'll be feeling more secure. But obviously knowing he's got to keep doing it.
Is it a little bizarre how this season is following 2 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bizarre season in all sorts of ways, isn't it?
Really? Yeah.
Very relevant because the FA Cup third round draw is tonight. And Preston away, losing at a lower league side, was what finished off Neil Adams, wasn't it? So perhaps this season, I still think top two is going to be out of their reach. Maybe a playoff push is capable, but perhaps Delia and Ed Balls should be saying, Alex, take the FA Cup seriously, we don't want to go down that road again. That could be the difference between him and Neil Adams.
It was that and a defeat at Reading, which of course Norwich have coming up as a travel on Boxing Day. You'll get to enjoy that one, Dave, but you're looking forward to it already.
Yeah, me and Pad are going to have to take some turkey sandwiches along with us, I think.
Oh, don't rub it in.
and take the EFL trophy seriously, which seems to be the case from having just heard some of the players. Matt Jarvis is also included, I've just heard.
Yeah, Dave, you had the team, didn't you?
Yeah.
You remember
just,
it?
Just before we started recording, I saw, Tim Closer playing in that. This is the Checker Trade Trophy game, which you're covering tomorrow, aren't you, Pad, at Carrow Road. First knockout round against Swansea. Malumbu, Canos, Josh Murphy, Tim Closer. I don't think it said the keeper, but I guess it'll be Paul Jones. And yeah, a fairly strong team. But Closer is an interesting one there, though, isn't it? I mean, Bessong and Bennett on Saturday. You know, there were a few shaky moments, but there were signs of life there. I remember there was one funny moment on our side of the pitch where Pinto,
it's only funny when you win 5-0, by the way.
It is, yeah. Pinto and Oliveira, nice bit of skill to keep hold of possession in sort of close quarters. Then they pass it back to Ryan Bennett, who just thumped it down the pitch in an agricultural manner, which I thought was a lovely juxtaposition. But yeah, Closer, have words been said between him and Neil now? Is there a trust issue there that... Should Closer have just been let go in the summer, perhaps? He's said when he was on international duty, didn't he, at the start of the season, that basically the club said he was staying. If he doesn't want to be here, then I guess Alex is thinking long term.
I have to say, it's probably the question I've been asked most in the last week on the various live coverage and forums. And I don't, unless I'm just being naive, to me, he was in the team a lot. They weren't doing very well. He made a couple of mistakes and looked probably just as ropey as any centre-back that was currently playing. He got dipped out. The first game he got dipped out for, they went down to 10 men after 3 minutes, so Alec Neil probably didn't think it was a fair judgment. They lost narrowly to a long-range deflected goal at Derby. Again, this is what Alec Neil thinks and said. So he didn't want to change it, and now they've just won 5-0. So the chance hasn't come back for Tim Closer to come back into the team. And I'd say it's as straightforward as that. But maybe other people know more than me, but I don't know. How do you see it, Pad?
Exactly as you've painted it there, my man. It's nothing more than that. Otherwise, you know, I don't understand why he's got any divine right to be in the side. Now, me personally, I'd have him in the side because I think, on balance, what we've seen in his City career, he's one of the two best centre-backs at the club, so I would have him in. But that logic, to me, is more than sound. He was absolutely abysmal at Brighton. And if I was to stop and think, there was a few other games as well where he's looked, well, not to put too fine a point on it, a pale imitation of the guy who came in at the back end of last season in the Premier League. So, yeah, you know, nobody should have a divine right to be in that side. Doesn't matter whether you're Tim Closer or you're Jacob Murphy. And, that would be my reading of the situation. Whether there is anything else untoward, then we will find out fairly swiftly when January comes round. But, you know, ultimately, I would be far more confident about Norwich defensively if he was playing, because as bad as he was on that phase, he wasn't the only one. And, you know, I think the reality is, he, on top of his game, you'd have him in the side. So, but again, nice problem to have now. You know, clean sheet, and it's up to those lads now to continue that. And you're right, Derby, I thought them two particularly, they were very good because they were playing against, you know, Darren Bent and Tom Ince, who'd scored a few goals between them in the build-up, and they didn't really give him anything at all, bar one or two little sighters of John's goal. So, you know, but my fear with those two is there's always a Rick not far around the corner, so it's up to them really now. You know, if they can maintain their levels, then they'll stay in the side. If not, then Mr. Closer will be back.
There's nothing to say that obviously things don't get discussed if Tim is out of the picture momentarily in terms of the starting 11. The other thing I just wanted to bring up, Russell Martin. Now, when I brought this up, lots of people gone, oh, we didn't hear that. But let's be clear, I did definitely hear it, and it definitely happened. And people involved heard it as well. Russell Martin went over to applaud the Norwich City fans at Derby and got booed. He was on his own as he did it, and he got booed. Not by all the fans, but by enough for me to hear it in the press box across the ground. He comes on the pitch as a substitute on Saturday against Brentford. And a few people, again, not loads, but enough to hear, boo him from sort of snake pit, Lower Barkley area. What is that about? The guy may not have been playing as well as people would have wanted him to. They may be doubting his career, whether he's still got the legs. There's a suggestion people don't like what he said after Brighton, which is an interesting debate, because I think a lot of people felt it was fairly honest and probably would have preferred him to say it. But I don't get the booing.
There was one even earlier. We did the Community Sport Foundation quiz, didn't we? And Russell Martin read out one of the questions.
Oh, gosh,
they had
yes.
They had recorded questions, and then the players read out the answers as well. And Russell popped up, and some people booed him in there as well. And we were like,
video,
yeah.
So he could hear.
He wasn't even there. And we said, did that just happen?
The only thing I'd say about that is we got booed when we collected the winner's trophy. So if they're going to boo us, then they'll boo anything. But.
Well, I saw Russ, we went to the, without name dropping too much, went to the Ed Sheeran gig last week.
Yeah.
And I had a chat with him there. And
did you boo him?
No, I didn't boo him. I had a little chat with him, and you could, one or two things you could sort of tell he's hurt by the way people have been. I don't get it. He's a great servant. Yes, he's not been his best, but he's not the only one by a long stretch.
I don't think people should be being disrespectful to Russell Martin, and he's served the club very well. All right, if you don't think he should be in the team, fair enough, but I don't think booing is on at all.
But he is looking forward to a nice trip to South Africa with Brady and Wes, having won it in the auction at the Sheeran gig. So
what do they win in South Africa?
They got a 10-day trip for 10 to a holiday resort in South Africa.
Wow. 10 people.
How's he going to pick 10?
Well, I don't know. One will miss out.
Oh, God. There's splits in the dressing room, the ones who go to South Africa and the ones who don't.
I did offer my services, but Wes didn't seem too keen. But
all right. Okay.
I'm the little man of this group.
Right. I feel like we should move on. Barnsley then. Who's confident Norwich have turned the corner? They'll go to Barnsley and they'll do the business again. Dave?
I'm not convinced to that yet. It is a big tester. I mean, it'd be interesting to see how close he plays tomorrow night in the trophy game, to see his response. Because I agree with Pat. I'd ideally like to see him and Bessong alongside each other in defence.
Alex, I think it's the only combination we haven't seen yet.
Alex is quite set on this sort of left-sided, right-sided thing, isn't he? But, you know, Close is a good enough player when he's on form that he could handle playing in that right berth, I think. There was a nice moment with Bessong second half Saturday as well, when he put in a powering header and it went into the south stand, and he got a really nice round of applause for it, didn't he? Because that was proper old school defending. So that would be the one sort of tweak to the team that I'd be looking at. But yeah, that's, you need to get a draw there, all good.
Yeah, well, Mr. Gedge informs me it's 9 wins and a draw in the last 10 meetings, so
always beat Barnsley-ish.
That's what I'm saying. So there's no need for that run not to continue. And then we'll see, as Clarkie, to bring it right round to the start again. Two big dates at Cairo. Two sides, okay, Huddersfield have fallen away a little bit, but I think Villa will be right there in the mix. So next three games, yeah, it could decide a lot of issues, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a good foundation, but we've just got to build on that.
Looking forward to seeing Conor Hourihane play.
Yeah, we talked about whether he could be a summer signing, didn't we?
It's in the magazine, in amongst the targets for Norwich City over January.
Available in all good magazine stores soon.
Wherever you'd buy a magazine, the new Pinken magazine will be for sale there.
I put to, after the AGM, I put to Ed Bulls that in an ideal world, if Alex could do enough to get through to January and relieve the pressure a little bit, have January, obviously they've promoted Ricky Martin to have the responsibility responsibility for player recruitment. In an ideal world, would it, from the board's point of view, would it be that Alex does enough to stick around till then, that they don't have to make any bad decisions like that? He can then remould the squad a little bit, as Ricky Martin almost made clear at the AGM that they want to rebalance it, and then they can really judge him on the second half of the season as to whether he has got what it takes to get them back either this season or next season. And he didn't say as much, but he, the smile on his face sort of suggested that that would be ideal for the board, and that is now what it looks like could well happen.
All depends on who comes and who goes in that very situation. If you've been out too much quality, you're in trouble. But we'll see. Anyway, we'll see if we get that far, won't we? Right, thanks, gents. Thanks all for listening. Don't forget pinken.com for the build-up, pinken.com/live for the live coverage, the Pinken Show on Mustard TV, all over the course of the week. And we'll see you the other side of Oakwell, where hopefully they've installed Wi-Fi and electricity into the press box. And there may even be a roof for the toilets. You never know. Until then, goodbye.